This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Traffic on I-77 in Charlotte has always been a problem for commuters, and as the region grows, so does the traffic. The problem is particularly acute north of the city, with the highway being bumper-to-bumper, a parking lot at times during rush hours, and it is obviously a source of tremendous frustration for drivers. Among the solutions that have been proposed are proposals to construct high-occupancy vehicle lanes or widening the highway, but the idea that seems to have won out involves the creation of toll lanes. That solution is not without its detractors, but it appears to be a done deal, and we've invited several people involved in the project to talk about that decision and how those lanes will work. Ned Curran is the chairman of the North Carolina Board of Transportation. He is also president and CEO of the Bissell Companies and has chaired the Regional Roads Committee and the Road Solutions Committee of 21. Not 20, not 22, but 21. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, Mike.
Why is it 21?
We're 21 members.
Okay. Well, that's why, though. Never mind. Roger Rochelle is a technical services administrator for the North Carolina Department of Transportation. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
And Lewis Mitchell is a division engineer for Division 10, which I assume is our division in this region of the NCDOT. Thank you for being here as well.
Thank you.
Let's start with a little history. I-77 was widened a couple of years ago. They added some HOV, high occupancy vehicle lanes, northwest from I-77. 85 interchange to Harris Boulevard, which really seems the longest portion of it, but it's only 5 miles, and the longest portion is I-485 south to the Brookshire Freeway. It doesn't seem that way to me, but it's true. That widening seemed at the time, at least to me, to be insufficient. So why didn't we do it right the first time?
Well, your point is correct. You talked about history. Historically, we're always playing catch-up. It's challenging.
Why?
Because it's challenging to get ahead from a funding standpoint. Because of population growth. If you look at our state over the last few decades, we've always been at the top of the list for the number of people that are coming here. When we look ahead, when we go out 25 years, we're going to grow by another third. 4 out of 5 of those people will end up in urban areas. We're facing some daunting challenges.
But, you know, I-77, this seems like a no-brainer to me. I mean, I know nothing about roads or transportation, but this is a major city, and it's certainly become one, a major city in the last couple of years. I have some facts here that I got to find here. 135%, the population has gone 135% in the last 25 years in the region. And just a couple of weeks ago, Charlotte's population put us into the number 16 rank of cities in the country, with the 16th largest city in the country. This did not come as a surprise. We've seen this coming. If you drive down I-77 from Davidson to the South Carolina state line, you look at I-77 and you think, this is too narrow for a big city. It goes right in the middle of the city. Why is it so narrow? When you get into South Carolina, it explodes between here and Rock Hill. They had foresight. Why didn't we?
Well, it's a good question. It's a valid question. Part of that has to do with how we allocate money across the state. It's a big part of why we changed the law last year. We came up with an entirely new law. The governor, the legislature, in a remarkably bipartisan fashion, fashioned a new law. And it's based on data. It's based on things like congestion, safety, cost-benefit analysis, the types of things that you would think are common sense. And those are helping us now be more prudent in how we spend the money.
How much of it is based on the fact that the capital's in Raleigh and they don't care about us?
At this point, not at all. We look at it across the state. We look at all modes.
In the past.
Well, I wouldn't say Raleigh. I mean, everybody has a different perspective on state allocations. I've heard people say to me, why does Fayetteville get an outer belt completed or funded before we have in Charlotte?
Why indeed?
City? Well, it's where the first responders of our nation's military is. I think as a country, we want to know that we can get those assets and those resources out if we need them.
But aren't we the transportation hub for this part of the country? I mean, seriously, isn't one of our selling points the fact that you can get anywhere within hours, and you can bring cargo through Charlotte within hours? And as we become this intermodal hub at the airport, bringing in cargo that's shipped through the Panama Canal to Wilmington or Charleston up the highway to Charlotte and distributed outward, why wouldn't somebody think, you know, we need roads to do this?
You know, Mike, your point and your passion are exactly what we feel.
It's stupid.
But the reality is, this is what we feel across the state. In each part of the state, in each region, there are unique challenges, unique needs, whether it's agriculture business wanting to get wood products to the coast, whether we've got port cities where we're trying to get resources where we can move goods and services, something as simple as trying to get refrigerated systems in a port that can help jobs mm-hmm. in the agriculture portion of our state. So every part of the state says, we have needs, we have demands. Why doesn't somebody understand how important it is to us?
Well, explain this to me. I-85 was widened considerably in the last several years. Was it after or before the I-77 HOV lanes were added? I don't remember.
I-85 was widened along the same time okay. in the late 90s,
well,
early 2000s.
Look at I-85. It's eight lanes. Why isn't I-77 eight lanes?
Well, when you look back at the history of Charlotte and how the entire region developed, the Upper Center developed, and then we had the bedroom communities such as your Rock Hills, such as your Kannapolis, and your Concords. But the inner city of Charlotte, we were constricted by the land use that had already occurred along the 77 corridor. But when you look at I-85 to the north, it almost replicates I-77 into South Carolina. So the populations that ensued around this epicenter is what drove the traffic demand.
So let me see if I understand this. You're saying that because I-77 goes through the city of Charlotte, the actual city, not just the outlying suburbs, the actual city, that we are constricted in why we can make a highway because of right-of-way?
When we look at balancing the land use and the practicality of the facilities, yes, we are going to be constricted. Look at I-77 South today. We're going to have to make some important decisions on how we widen that particular corridor.
But now, I've lived in other cities, and I lived in the D.C. area, and I've seen the Capitol Beltway go from two lanes in each direction to I don't even know how many lanes there are now because you can't count them. That goes through many jurisdictions. It goes through the city of Alexandria. It goes through Arlington County. It goes through Rockville, Maryland. It goes through Silver Spring, Maryland. It goes through all these municipalities. They just took the land and built the road. Why don't we?
Well, certainly, we'll have to make those choices with our stakeholders.
Why haven't we?
Well, we'll have to consult with our MPO members. Again, it's going to be a balance of land use along with transportation, because if we do widen, that will mean businesses and residents that will be displaced.
I'm just trying to get an idea of. I don't mean to be belligerent. I'm just trying to figure out how we arrived at toll roads.
Well, we're not the only ones to arrive at toll roads. And if I roll the history clock all the way back, since you talked about history in the very beginning, before we were even a state, people were paying tolls to get across a river, to go across somebody's private land. Now, that using that as the reason why we would do tolling today is not where I'm trying to go with this. The point is that tolling is one more solution to try and get ahead of it. The very frustration that I feel coming across the studio here from you is all part of why we're looking at things like tolling, why we're looking at public-private partnerships. We're trying to find solutions that can bring in more revenue so that we can get ahead of this, as particularly in light of the population gains that we're seeing.
If you hear frustration, I don't even know where it's coming from, because I don't travel I-77. I have no skin in the game. All right, I said in the beginning that this toll road concept is a done deal. Then I read somebody's comments that it isn't a done deal until the contracts have been signed. So is it a done deal? Have the contracts been signed? And I guess I'll go to Roger for that.
Yes, indeed. The contract was signed on June 26th of this year after a two-year-long procurement. We are now in a phase where we're going towards what we call financial close, and that is assisting our private partner in making sure that they can get their loans in place, providing the data to the lenders and so forth, so they can get their loans in place to finance the project.
Now, the private partner here is a company called Cintra US. We invited one of their representatives to be with us this morning, and they were going to be with us until sometime late yesterday afternoon when they canceled. But Cintra US, I'd heard in the media and just through conversations with people that we were hiring some Mexican company to do this, but this is called Cintra US. They're headquartered in Austin, Texas. Are they a branch of another company, an international company?
They are a subsidiary, but they are an international infrastructure management company, and they bring to the table billions of dollars of experience in infrastructure investing.
And they've done this all over the world, not just in the United States. They have projects all over the world like
this. That's correct, and not just highway projects.
So why then do you have to vet them? to make sure they have enough money up front to be able to operate, to build and operate this thing before the revenues start coming in?
Sure. You need to make sure that their current financial structure is in place, that they've got both the design, the construction resources in place to actually complete the project.
How much control do they have over the design of this? How much input have they had? Did we go with them because they came up with a terrific idea as opposed to company B that didn't have such a great idea?
They do have some innovative ideas in their design, and they are fully in control of the original design. All of that is subject to our review and our Federal Highway Administration partners, their review of the design to make sure it meets national code standards and so forth.
So how will this work? If we have limited real estate to the left and right as you go up or down the highway, and we already have HOV lanes, what happens? Are we actually going to physically widen I-77 north of the city to a certain point? What's going to happen?
That's exactly right. And in the places where there is an existing HOV lane, that will be converted to a managed lane. Mm-hmm. Alongside that will be added another managed lane. Where there exist no managed lanes or no HOV lanes to date, there will be two managed lanes built all the way up to exit 28.
So let me see if I understand you. Where there's an HOV lane, that will become a toll lane.
That's correct.
Where there is no HOV lane, you're going to put two toll lanes?
That's correct, up to exit 28, at which point it transitions to one HOT lane all the way up to exit 36.
Now help me understand. Where does it begin? Where will the toll road begin? If you're coming from Charlotte, where will it begin?
So entrance to the toll lanes can occur either at the 277 I-77 interchange, either from 277 directly or from 77 coming northward at that interchange. From that point forward, there will be two managed lanes when the product is complete, when the project's over.
And that goes all the way to exit 28.
That's correct.
Which exit, for those who don't know the
geography? That's up in Mooresville.
Okay.
Exit 28, West Catawba Avenue in Cornelius.
Okay, in Cornelius.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then one managed lane will continue up to Mooresville, exit 36.
Okay, and the same is true in reverse. If you're coming from exit 36 to Charlotte, it goes from there to where?
All the way back down to the 77-277 interchange.
One of the problems with the current highway is that it gets narrow as you go north, and that causes a bottleneck as traffic in the afternoon tries to merge to fewer lanes. If you're going to do that with the toll lanes, won't the same thing happen on the toll lanes as people try to merge from two lanes to one?
Well, we do see a difference in the traffic once we get above 28 in some regards. In addition, you've got physical environmental restrictions north of 28, most notably the Lake Norman causeways, that become problematic as well.
Well, you're going to have to take down some bridges, which we're going to talk about in the next segment, but are you going to widen the causeways?
No, we don't need to widen the causeways with this solution.
Okay, tell me why.
Because we can actually fit one more lane in each direction within the existing grass median on the causeways.
Okay. We have to take a break. We'll come back and talk more about the toll lanes that have not been proposed. They're going to happen north of the city and talk about more about how they operate, because it's a little confusing to a lot of people about how you pay the toll, because there aren't going to be any toll gates and more. There's a lot to talk about here. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE.
Support comes from WFAE members and Flip My Food on WBTV Channel 3 with Chef Jeff Henderson, weekday mornings at 9, then WBTV News every evening at 11, reporting facts, getting answers, finding solutions. WBTV on your side.
And from Taylor Richards and Conger, a Charlotte specialty retailer featuring off-the-peg and made-to-measure clothing for professional men. Artisan-crafted jackets with working sleeve buttons and high-thread count shirtings in-store or at home or office. TRCstyle.com. Well, earlier this year, advances were made in prenatal testing for Down syndrome, and that raised fears that more parents might choose not to have a child with Down. Well, it turns out that decision can also be impacted by the way a doctor delivers the news. So we're going to be talking about that and about the recent news that there may be a genetic connection between Down syndrome and the onset of Alzheimer's later in life, all tomorrow at 9.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, across the country, states are turning to gambling to boost revenues. Casino developers are vying for a foothold. Cities like Baltimore and Cleveland. A look at the gambling industry, how its revenues are affecting state coffers and local communities.
Join the conversation on the Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 to noon after Charlotte Talks on 90.7 WFAE, Charlotte's NPR news source.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about the toll lanes that will be coming your way on I-77 north of the city with Ned Curran, who is the chairman of the North Carolina Board of Transportation, Roger Rochelle, Technical Services Administrator, and Lewis Mitchell, Division 10 Engineer for the North Carolina Department of Transportation. There's an opposition group to this, as you might imagine, and as I know you're well aware, called Widen I-77. They argue that these new toll lanes are going to be added in places that do not need them, namely the section north of I-85 at mile marker 13. I'm not sure where that is, running north to just after the new intersection with I-485 at mile marker 22. They say that it would be cheaper to add general purpose lanes where they are needed than to build toll lanes where they are not, particularly because it will involve tearing down four existing bridges and rebuilding them to allow for the widening of these toll lanes. If you understand all that, and I'm not sure that I do, I'd like you to comment on it, but also if they advocate adding general purpose lanes, what's the difference? If you have to add a lane and take a bridge down to add the lane, don't you still have to take the bridge down and put it back up?
That's essentially correct. When we first started this project, we were looking at replacing perhaps 8 or 9 bridges up and down the corridor. As we refined the design and worked with our private partner, we've gotten that down to 3 bridges that cross 77 that need to be replaced as part of the project.
But what about their comment that it would be cheaper to add general purpose lanes where they are needed as opposed to putting toll lanes where they say they are not
needed? You need to make sure you're comparing apples to apples in the scope of the work that's being done. We do anticipate that putting in managed lanes will cost about 5 to 10% more than general purpose lanes. You've got a little bit more asphalt. You've got the technology that goes behind the tolling systems. However, you need to think about the long term. And what the managed lanes do is they provide a long-term solution, a 50-year solution for guaranteeing reliable travel time up and down the corridor. The GP lane puts you in a position, general purpose lane puts you in a position where 5, 6, 7, 8 years from now, the induced demand to that lane, now you're fully congested. Now what do you do? Do you add another general purpose lane for additional cost?
Well, explain that more fully, because it's still X number of lanes. It's the same number of lanes, but the managed lane, which is the toll lane, which means you can only use it if you're willing to pay, there will be a subset of people who choose to do that, particularly in times of congestion. It would seem to me that in the middle of the day when there is no congestion or very little congestion, people won't use it at all. It'll be fallow. So then you have this whole lane sitting out there doing nothing. And when you use that lane in the afternoon or in the morning because of the congestion, doesn't that cause more congestion? Isn't there a time, because that lane is – some people are not going to be willing to pay the tolls – where it's going to be more congested in the general purpose lanes than it is today?
Let me address a few points there. First, I want to point out that if you have 3 or more passengers in your vehicle, you can use those managed lanes for free 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. That's an important distinction.
So when they go toll, if you have 3 people in the car, you don't pay the toll?
That's absolutely correct.
How are they going to make any money on this?
One of the beauties of a public-private partnership where we have shed a significant amount of risk to our private partner is if they don't make that money, then we're not on the hook for that debt. They are. But to address your point about managed lanes are named that for a purpose. Essentially, you're managing the throughput, or you're managing the amount of traffic that goes through that lane, and you're managing it by adjusting the toll prices up or down. What we've seen across the country is managed lanes is a more efficient use of the asphalt because it puts more cars through that lane each and every hour. My analogy is if I have this water bottle and I want to empty it as fast as possible, if I pour it out slowly, a free flow at a constant speed, it's going to empty faster than if I just turn it upside down and that water becomes turbulent. That's what managed lanes do. They guarantee a certain travel speed, they keep everybody moving at that speed, and you end up getting more vehicles and more people through the corridor each and every hour.
Let's talk about how this works, because I think it's a mystery to a lot of people. I don't really think I understand how it works either, because you just said you're guaranteed a certain speed, et cetera, et cetera. These toll lanes will operate 24/7, correct?
Correct.
So Sunday morning at 2 a.m., it's a toll lane, and if you have one person in the car, if you want to use that lane, you pay the toll.
That's correct.
But the toll will be cheaper at 2 a.m. on Sunday morning than it will be at 7 a.m. on Monday morning, correct?
Correct.
How does that happen?
It's really a remarkable dynamic pricing model. And we often get asked, how much is it going to cost from, you know, the northernmost point of this to get into Center City?
That was going to be one of my questions.
And
yes.
You know, there's lots of numbers that are out there.
Is it like the Jersey Turnpike? I mean, seriously, you pay less if you use less of the highway.
Well, I'm old enough to remember the punch card on the New Jersey Turnpike,
exactly,
and this
right.
has none of that. So that's a nice feature. But it's dynamic pricing. So when Roger talked about it's to manage a certain speed, if the managed lane gets congested, the price goes up. So the consumer decides, I don't want to pay that. So they start to go out of that lane. That keeps the flow. That keeps a certain speed.
Let's back up. Let's talk about how this is going to work. Because most people, when they think of a toll road, they think of going to the toll plaza and paying the toll and getting on the road. Or if they're coming in after the big toll plaza, there's a little gate at the entrance ramp, and you put your toll in, or you have your Easy Pass card on your dashboard, and it knows who you are, and the gate goes up, and off you go on your way, and it knows where you got on, and it knows where you got off, and it charges you accordingly. That's not how this is going to work. How is it going to work?
So we refer to it as all electronic tolling. There is no stopping at any gates. There is no slowing for any gates. You simply the most efficient way to do it is to have a transponder. This will be for a nominal fee, $20, $25, something like that. You post it on your dashboard. It knows.
So it's like Easy Pass in Manhattan, New Jersey.
It's exactly like Easy Pass. In fact, it's interoperable with our NC Quick Pass that's used on the toll road currently in operation in Raleigh.
So where do I get this easy? Where do I get this device?
You can purchase those through the North Carolina Turnpike Authority.
I have to buy it?
That's correct.
And then I have to pay the toll on top of that?
That's correct. Now, you do have an option. If you think you're going to use the road once or twice, and that's it, then there's video tolling. It takes a picture of your license tag, looks up your address, and sends you a bill.
Well, that was going to be my next question, because obviously not everybody's going to know that you have to buy these things, and they're not going to. And people traveling from other states may be passing through, and they see this thing. They see it may be marked toll road, but they don't see any gates. So what the heck? It's congested. I'm getting over there. How do you charge them? You take a picture of their license plate at what point? Because I could get in anywhere, right? It's not going to be a gated thing. If I'm on the road and it slows down on the main road and I happen to be in the lane next to it, can't I just move over into it?
There'll be plastic balustrades separating the general purpose lanes from the managed lanes, and there will be certain ingress and egress points along the corridor, 6 or 7 specifically. So once you get into the managed lanes, then you stay in that managed lane for, say, 2 miles or 2.5 miles to the next egress point, and then you have the option to remain in the managed lane or depart the managed lane.
Okay, well, that brings a whole other set of questions up. We'll go back to the money in a second, but if you have to get off because your exit is coming up, and the main road, the free road, is like it is today, a parking lot, stopped. How do you get off without slowing everybody behind you down to a stop? And if it's only one lane, how do you get off?
Well, our current design has, as Roger described, ingress and egress points. Those areas will have transition sections, and many of those transition sections are between 2,000 and 2,500 feet. So it won't be a sudden.
How many cars can fit in 2,000 feet? I have no idea.
Well, the average car is about 20 feet in distance.
So 100 cars?
Yes, but we have to remember these cars will be traveling at a speed. They're not going to be parked. But the transition distance itself is much greater than what our normal interstate ramp would be.
But if you travel, and I have traveled I-77 north and south occasionally during rush hour, and it does stop. It stops. All lanes stop. So if all lanes that you want to get off, if you need to get off at exit whatever, and everybody in those other free lanes are stopped, and there are 10 cars or whatever who want to get off the toll to get off and go over to the right to get off the highway proper, don't they have to stop too?
Well, one of the things about this project, it is a transportation solution that is providing capacity and travel time reliability. So because we actually will have vehicles traveling the managed lane, there will be less vehicles in the general purpose lanes. So the backups and queues that we see today mm-hmm. will be less. Mm-hmm. And one of the examples of this in the country right now is in Miami, I-95, their expressway. What they have seen is increased performance in their general purpose lanes due to the managed lanes being introduced.
Now, you're the experts here. I don't know anything about this, but it just seems to me that if we have some of these lanes now, they're called HOV lanes, and they are not used as much perhaps as the other lanes because you have to have two people in the car to use them. If you open the HOV lanes to general purpose traffic, wouldn't the same effect happen? Wouldn't what you're saying is that the people using the toll lanes will diminish the congestion on the general purpose lanes because there will be a whole bunch of people in this one toll lane. Well, then why not just open the HOV lanes and let everybody use the HOV lanes? Won't that diminish the traffic and therefore take away the need to put toll lanes in?
It's not enough capacity. You're not adding enough capacity. So when you mention,
what is the difference? It's the same number of lanes.
No, we're actually adding lanes in this concept. And when you
why not add lanes?
Well,
make them free.
That's what we're doing. But we're adding more capacity than just what we would add in just a single general purpose lane. And you talked earlier about some of the folks who think we could do this maybe in pieces, or that there's elements that are more congested than others. And one of the really great things about this concept is this is one of the largest single interstate projects we've ever been associated with. And so
we being
the DOT.
Okay.
And so both financially and in terms of the distance. And so this is an entire system change. So when you think about the ingress egress points or the challenges of crossing, this provider, Sintra, this is a 50-year plan. So they're looking at this as a system. So how is this going to operate? And if it's not designed properly, everything they're about is trying to make this system work efficiently and to have folks who want to use the managed lanes. So they're going to design it. They're going to make it operate in a way that you can move out of that system and take an exit if you want to. It's in their best interest, which is in the best interest of us as users of the road.
And these egress areas where you get off the toll lane to get to your exit and get off the highway will also be entrance lanes, right, for people who want to get on to the toll lane
yes,
at that point.
That's correct.
So how do you mix that traffic? Is it just like merging lanes today?
It serves similar to what we call a collector distributor. A good example of that is in the I-277-77 area. We have the frontage roads where people are able to successfully negotiate their way in and out of on and entrance ramps.
So it's a merge lane. It's a acceleration lane or deacceleration lane as we used to call them that nobody knows how to use because they refuse to do that. They come to a stop. So getting back to the money, if you're traveling through from Tennessee, you just happen to be on 77 coming through Charlotte, and you want to use these lanes, and you don't have the transponder, you just go in there and it takes a picture of – at what point does it take a picture of your license plate? How does it do it?
It takes a picture essentially at every overhead gantry where the equipment is. So at the beginning of each toll segment, we'll call it, there is a gantry that recognizes that your car's there if you have a transponder mm-hmm. or takes a photograph of your license plate if you do not have a transponder.
And you're moving at speed. So the old days of the tolling where you're slowing down, this is at speed.
So how does it do it? I mean, who then takes a look at the photograph and writes down the number and the state on the license plate, and the state's going to be obscured by the thing that says so-and-so auto dealership anyway. So how do you do it?
So we have experience in Raleigh with our toll road there in terms of looking up registration information on a vehicle tag for the purposes of toll enforcement. And we have reciprocity agreements with other states that we can go to those states and look up addresses and so forth. So all that will be done by the Turnpike Authority.
So human beings are doing this?
That's correct.
Wow. Is this going to raise employment? I'm serious. It's a serious question.
We have the back office services in place in Raleigh now. And in fact, when we do that service or other services like that for our private partner – we charge them a transaction fee for that service.
Okay, so that's there's dynamic pricing on the toll lanes, which means the tolls will change depending upon the congestion and the time of day and the day of the week, et cetera. So how do I, as a motorist, know what I'm about to pay?
So you have advance warning signs that tell you that the ingress point is coming up or the egress point is coming up, and it's a couple of signs in advance of that point, maybe a mile ahead, half mile ahead, that tells you what the current toll rate is.
Okay, and is it if I get on at the very beginning and stay on till the very end, is the price different than if I get on somewhere in the middle and travel to the next one or two egress points?
Right.
It's a different price?
So it depends on the segment. So if it takes you 30 minutes to travel the full corridor length, the last segment could be a different price than the first segment, but you always have that option. And I think this is one of the
So I have to keep track in my head. If I get on and it says right now the price is X and I go, 5-10 miles and suddenly the price is Y, I have to keep in my head, okay, X plus Y equals, and that's my toll?
That's correct. But you have that decision.
Can I text that while I'm doing it?
please don't. But you have that option at each point to make that value decision for you, and depending on where you're going and what your time frame is.
Who sets the prices?
The private operator sets the prices in order to meet the contract requirements to maintain 45 miles an hour.
And can they raise those prices? Like if they realize 5 months into this that this isn't cutting it, we have to raise our prices, can they do that?
My question would be, why isn't it cutting it? Is it because not enough folks are using the managed lanes?
Maybe that's it.
Then I think raising the prices is just the opposite thing of what they'd want to do.
According to WCNC TV News, no one, not the DOT and not the company, Sintra, will give a ballpark estimate of what the tolls will cost the drivers who want to use the lanes. Now, that story was delivered back in August. Here it is September. So let me ask you the question again. What will the tolls be?
It's not a matter of not answering the question. It's a matter of not being able to answer the question. We have projections from some of our older studies, but there are traffic and revenue studies done by multiple companies to shore up the financing for this project, some representing the Department of Transportation, some representing the lenders. And all of those have various sensitivity runs, and all of those show different toll rates or different assumptions on traffic.
But how do you make a decision? How do you, as professionals and people in charge of the Board of Transportation, and how do we as citizens know whether this is a good idea if we don't know what it's going to cost?
Because the bargain is there every minute of every day. If there are not enough people in the lane, the price drops. If too many people go in the lane, the price increases. So the answer to the question is the pricing will always be relative to demand. There will always be enough people that are generating it to make it work.
All right. I wish we didn't go to a break because I'm going to lose my train of thought. But we'll come back and we'll talk about more about these tolls and about Sintra, the company that's building this, and whether or not this really is a good deal for us, because it seems to me they hold all the cards, but maybe they don't. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and North Carolina's Amtrak, offering travel to 16 North Carolina cities. Information on travel and tickets, visit ncbytrain.org. And Blumenthal Performing Arts welcoming Cameron McIntosh's spectacular new production of Andrew Lloyd Webber's Phantom of the Opera at Belk Theater in February. This new North American tour features a cast and orchestra of 52. Tickets at 704-372-1000. Well, across the country, states are turning to gambling to boost revenues. Casino developers are vying for a foothold in post-industrial cities like Baltimore and Cleveland. Well, Steve Roberts is in today for Diane Rehm. He and his guests will talk about the gambling industry and how its revenues are affecting state coffers and local communities in about 20 minutes at 10 o'clock on the Diane Rehm Show. And if you'd like to join our conversation, email us at charlottetalks@wfae.org or search for WFAE on Facebook or Twitter. And we're coming right back.
In the last several years, there's been an explosion of interest in craft beer and microbreweries in the Queen City and around the country. Charlotte Talks with Mike Collins will record a special show about the history and growth of Charlotte's beer scene at Old Mecklenburg Brewery, Thursday night, September 25th. The recording is at 6:30, but Mike and the WFAE staff will be there from 5 to 8. So stop by and join us. Details at WFAE.org and click on events.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about the toll road on I-77 that will be going up to how far north?
Exit 36, Highway 150 in Mooresville.
From downtown Charlotte with Lewis Mitchell. That's the voice you just heard. He's the Division 10 engineer for the NCDOT. Roger Rochelle is with us, technical services administrator for them, and Ned Curran, the chairman of the North Carolina Board of Transportation. We're getting a lot of comments from listeners who are asking why there is no opposition on this panel, and that is because it's a done deal, and the point of having opposition at this point would be a moot point because it's going to happen. It's been decided, and this is what's going to happen. So I'm trying to bring as many opposing points of view that came to me beforehand into the conversation, but there's no point in having somebody arguing against it because it's going to happen. Is that not true?
That's correct.
Okay. Let me get back to Cintra because we were talking about prices and that they will set the price according to the congestion on the road and how many people are using it. And I asked you what happens if they need to raise the price because, you know, it's not making their nut. And you said, well, if people aren't using it, it's probably because it's too congested and therefore they'd have to lower the price, not raise the price. But maybe people aren't using it because it's too expensive. I mean, I've heard that it's going to be $11 to $20 a trip each way. Who in their right mind would do that? Seriously.
And that's how the market will drive the price downward. If individuals are not willing to pay $10, $12, $8, whatever that given toll rate is, the toll rate will have to drop to attract folks into the managed lanes.
Well, you know, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Well, you know, it's really not any different than any other product or any other service. You're a lawyer, you're an accountant, you're in the real estate business for rents. You alter your pricing based on demand. In this case, though, it's very dynamic. It's at the moment. And so you're getting real time. But the point is to keep the traffic flowing at 45 miles an hour or more. So if there are enough people in that lane that it's getting burdened, they're willing to pay the price. They've already made the bargain.
If it's such a good deal for Cintra, why wouldn't it be a good deal for the state of North Carolina? Why not just build the road, make it a toll road, collect the tolls, keep the money?
This goes to the very beginning of the conversation where we talked about how are we set up from a revenue standpoint. We have so many needs in the state, and we don't have enough money to fulfill all
Why
those
not?
Needs. Because there's just
you
not
know,
enough money.
I'm watching the Roosevelt thing on PBS this week. And last night, I'm watching Monday's show on Tuesday because I'm a day behind. But last night, they talked about President Roosevelt, Teddy Roosevelt, preserving all this land. He built the Panama Canal. We haven't gotten to the Hoover Dam yet in the series. America used to do stuff, big stuff. Why can't we build a highway?
Well,
really serious about that.
Well, you know, let me just pivot for just a moment and just talk about what's happening as we speak. The governor and the secretary of transportation are crossing the state today, announcing the governor's 25-year transportation vision. This is a year and a half's worth of effort, coordinating with DOT staff, the public, stakeholders, DOT board. And for the governor, this comes right out of his Charlotte experience when he sat there and he said, how are we as a city, when he was the mayor, going to advance mobility here? And out of that came our transportation plan, the corridors, the wedges, the light rail system. And he said, that's what I want to bring to the state of North Carolina. And so we looked at the unique needs across the state. We looked at the coast, the eastern portion of the state, the central portion that would include Charlotte and Raleigh, and the western portion, and all the unique needs. And the point of all that is to identify those items that people whose economy, lifestyles relate to those regions say, what do we need? What do we do now to set the stage for 25 years? What do we do now for a state that's going to grow by a third in population? So to your point, but underscoring that is how do we then pay for it? Mm-hmm. And so what are the types of revenue options that we're going to use? And North Carolina is not alone. Federal government and every other state that relies heavily on the gas tax sees a real challenge there. We have a declining revenue source.
And that's because of the higher mileage cars?
Higher mileage cars. Not as many people are making as many trips. I don't know if you order things off of Amazon or Google. That's one less trip that you made to a store where a delivery service is bringing something. So we don't have as many vehicle miles being traveled.
So we're in the middle of a paradigm change? Is that what you're
telling
me?
We're in the middle of a paradigm change, and we have to look to alternatives to fund it. And in North Carolina, we have to look not just to replacing that portion of the gas tax that's declining, but also looking to grow it. When we went on this plan, mm-hmm. and we went across the state and we said, what are your current needs? The total needs total $70 billion today. We have $1.5 billion a year to spend. It'll take us 50 years to build the projects that are identified today across the state. So we're looking and saying, how do we address this? That's why we're talking about public-private partnerships.
And I know you can't answer this question because you're not in the legislature, but if that's the case, why did we cut taxes?
Well, in this case, our taxes primarily come from gas tax revenues. They primarily come from motor registration fees.
Because somebody made that decision. You can make another decision.
I think we have friends in the legislation. I think it's bipartisan. The new law that passed last year for how we allocate funding was remarkably bipartisan, and I think there's going to be bipartisan support to look at new ways to fund transportation. I'm fairly encouraged about that.
Because, you know, suddenly we can't afford to do things because we don't have enough revenue coming in. There seems to be a connection missing somewhere.
But we're not alone when it comes to transportation. Even the federal government, the Federal Highway Trust Fund, has now been operating in the red for a number of years.
Okay. It's interesting. If you look at studies across the country, including our own Fast Lane study here, and you survey residents or citizens, the majority of the people favor a toll for that specific use rather than raising taxes in general.
Because the price of the road is paid for by the people who use it.
That's essentially
the user has a choice.
That's
okay.
Right.
Let's get back to money and how these things work. Right now, for instance, in North Carolina, we have a law that says you have to get out of the way of emergency vehicles. And on a congested highway, sometimes you have to move into the HOV lane to get out of the way of the emergency vehicles. And you don't get charged because you get out of the way. You know, if you only have one person in the car, you can make that momentary pit stop in the HOV, getting out of the way of the emergency vehicle. What happens in the toll lanes? If you have to get into the toll lane to get out of the way, what happens?
Well, we retained an awful lot of control over this corridor. We own the corridor. Sintra does not own this road. We own the road. We make the decisions on the management of this road. That includes our ability to suspend tolling at any point for any reason. So if it's a short-term incident and we elect to suspend the tolls, then there's a conversation about whether or not that impacted their revenue. But if there's an emergency evacuation, a declaration of emergency, we suspend tolling. There's no effect on the contract.
You said earlier, I think it was you, Roger, who said earlier that if for some reason the toll structure does not bring in a sufficient revenue for Sintra, the risk they hold the risk.
That's correct.
But isn't it true that taxpayers are contributing $88 million to the project and that we will subsidize any shortfall in revenues for up to 8 years for up to $75 million? And if I did the math, that's $163 million.
Yes, so there is an $88 million initial contribution on a $655 million project. So of that $655, the DOT is contributing $88 million. That's a very small percentage. It is true that there is an innovative support mechanism in here to bring down interest rates and bring down the overall cost that in the event that their revenues fall far short of their projections, then we would subsidize for that 1 year to an extent that brings their debt back to being covered.
Well, every transit project I've ever heard about has had cost overruns, and sometimes those cost overruns are considerable. Is that built into how this is being thought of by Sintra?
No.
Could they be surprised? Could we be surprised? Because we have an email here from Brent on Facebook who says, you're signing a contract with a company that has been bankrupted two similar projects. Is that a good idea to get in bed with them? I don't know if that's true or not. I'm just telling what the emailer is saying.
The U.S. Sintra is not bankrupt. There are two projects that they hold in their portfolio of 26 projects worldwide that they consider are underperforming. One recently went into bankruptcy so as to restructure their debt. But from an owner's perspective, mm-hmm. this is Indiana, by the way, okay. From an owner's perspective, the owner is not harmed in that situation. There's no default on the contract. They are still building the road. They're still operating the road. They're still maintaining the road. It's simply that they are restructuring their own debt.
Let me share some comments that have come in while we've been talking on our website and Facebook and Twitter, et cetera. About time. Widening this road will be fantastic. Can we get the Garden Parkway built as a toll road also? Everybody has a smile on their face. Bartek on Facebook, I was always proud of our state for not having toll roads. This would be an extra reason to move somewhere else. There are other ways to raise funds. Robert emails, they will need to widen Statesville and Old Statesville as local traffic will go that way through Huntersville Town Center to Davidson Town Center. I guess he's saying that we'll avoid the highway. Are they doing that today?
Through the new legislation, we do have projects that have been ranked. And I can tell you that the projects along U.S. 21 and NC 115 rank comparatively well. And so those jurisdictions do have plans to improve those facilities moving into the future.
What kind of – because, you know, any traffic construction, any road construction project causes disruption. So what kind of disruption can motorists who use that road every single day in both directions expect?
As part of the contract requirements, Centra is required to maintain – the existing capacity that we have today. And so in the sections where we have two lanes, general purpose lanes, they're required to maintain that throughout the life of construction. In the sections where we have three or greater lanes, they also required to maintain
that. But if that you're taking down three bridges, that's going to be disruptive.
Well, there'll be traffic shifts to accommodate
that's
the
what
construction
I'm saying. It's already a parking lot. What's going to happen during construction? That's what I'm asking.
But we'll maintain our existing design standards as far as curves and negotiating our interstates. Ultimately, we do ask people sometimes to slow down the work zone for the benefit of the traveling public and the workers. So sometimes in sections where we have 60, 65, you will probably see a reduction to 55 miles per hour out of consideration for safety of the motorists.
Speaking of speeds, what will the speed limit be on the HOV lanes? On the toll lanes, excuse me.
The speed limit is set by the corridor. There's no difference in speed limit in the managed lanes and the general purpose lanes.
But I read somewhere that you are guaranteeing a certain speed.
It is a federal requirement and a contract requirement to maintain 45 miles per hour in that managed lane. If the speed limit is posted above 55, then it's actually 10 miles below the posted speed limit.
You're going to pay $20 to be 10 miles below the posted speed limit?
You're saying the minimum speed.
That's the minimum speed.
So if it's a 70 mile, then instead of it being 45 miles that they have to maintain 60 miles an hour.
Okay, but you're guaranteeing that the traffic will flow at a certain speed.
That's correct.
What if it doesn't?
If it doesn't, then that's when the prices will rise to drive folks out of the managed lanes.
So what if I'm in the managed lane and it's not moving at the guaranteed speed, and therefore the computer decides, okay, I'm raising the price. Am I all of a sudden stuck in a slow-moving lane, and I'm paying more than I thought I was going to pay when I got in?
Well, you elect at that next egress point to exit that managed lane. I think one of the beauties
of
these—
You have to have a college degree in this as you negotiate these lanes.
We are actually in concert with Centra preparing a video that will explain this, and I think that will be very helpful when that's complete. But one of the beauties of these managed lanes is you don't have to get in at Mooresville and travel to Uptown Charlotte. Mm-hmm. If there are portions of the project that are currently more congested than on a given day, then you can get in the managed lane to bypass that congestion and then immediately leave that managed lane at the next egress point.
You know, the other element of this, you had someone write in and say, I'm just going to go ahead and move. Now the tolls come to North Carolina. And earlier, Roger,
that'll be helpful.
And earlier, Roger, well, I don't think you're going to be able to get away from it. I mean, when two-thirds of the states have tolling, they're all looking at it. Roger had talked about reciprocity with other states. Uh-huh. I mean, people are going to become knowledgeable about how this operates because they're going to experience it throughout the country.
Although I still haven't figured out how to pay the tolls on the blue line. I can't figure the machines out. Jorge on Facebook writes, tolls are fair. The people that use the resource pay for it. Why would anyone in Charlotte support paying higher taxes just so the people that move out of the city can have an easier commute, especially since those people move there to pay fewer taxes, lower taxes. Ken on Facebook, so municipalities allow congestion to get worse. More people use the toll lanes out of desperation and private corporations profit. What could possibly go wrong with such a brilliant plan? And one of the opponents, the leader of that group, Widen I-77, Kurt Nass, says this is not a private sector efficiency. It is a government-sanctioned monopoly. They run this road. They have a guarantee to run this road for 50 years. That's a lifetime. So are these people right?
No. No, they're not.
Why aren't they right?
They are contracted to design, build, operate, and maintain and finance this $655 million project. That is the contract. Mm-hmm. We maintain.
How much do they stand to make if all goes well?
Well, that depends on the market.
That's what I'm saying. If all, no one knows any numbers. Why not?
But I will also say that there are provisions in the contract such that if they refinance their debt and there's a gain because of that, we share in that. If they exceed their revenue projections, then we start sharing in that revenue. The top band of revenue sharing is we receive 75% of that excess revenue.
So Michael says 50 years from now, I-77 will have the same number of free lanes that it had almost 40 years ago. What effect will that have on future development north of Charlotte? And why put this burden of a toll on users of I-77?
You know, as a business person who's in the real estate business, I'll tell you that customers I have, major corporations, they want predictable transportation systems. Mm-hmm. Tolling is part of a predictable transportation system. So it's not going to thwart development. If anything, it will simply encourage it.
And somebody brought up that the buses, CATS buses, will be able to be in these toll lanes for free. And so they'll be in the toll lanes, right?
Yes.
And that should facilitate, if you want to go quick, get on the bus and go, right?
Right.
That's right.
When will this all begin and when will it be completed?
So, as we mentioned, we've signed the contract, so we've started pre-construction activities, design, things of that nature. We would anticipate construction to start probably early summer next year and be wrapped up in about 4 years' time.
That's Roger Rochelle, Technical Services Administrator for the North Carolina Department of Transportation. Louis Mitchell, a Division 10 engineer, has also been with us, and Ned Curran is the Chairman of the North Carolina Board of Transportation. Thank you all for the hour. That'll be 11:50, by the way. I'm just kidding.
Charlotte Talks with Mike Collins is a